Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810, WHB, wherever you get your podcasts, wherever you stream your video content. As always, we appreciate you checking out the show, and we've got a busy one for you today. As always, I've got Carter Augustine with me. I've got Allie Trost back from vacation, and we've got a busy show because Cal Williams is going to join us in the next segment. Former voice of Sporting Kansas City, current voice of Minnesota United. We'll get an in-depth look at this current Minnesota United team, maybe the best one that's ever come to Children's Mercy Park, probably the best one that's ever come to Children's Mercy Park. And we'll talk with Johnny Russell, captain for Sporting Kansas City now, and a guy that's been scoring a lot of goals and had a lot of assists ever since coming to Kansas City, could have a big role to play in this game on Thursday night. Johnny will be joining us later on in the show as well. But guys, and Carter, I'll start with you. The news came out yesterday, right in the middle of Peter Vermes' address with the media. This game has been moved. It's supposed to be a Wednesday night game. It was moved on to Thursday night because of the NFL, of all things. They're having to juggle their schedule around. Fox was supposed to have a Thursday night primetime NFL game. That game got pushed, so, hey, we got a time slot open. Major League Soccer, would you like to fill it? Of course, they jumped at the opportunity to do that, but it does put Sporting Kansas City and Minnesota United in a little bit of an interesting spot. What do you make of the change and how that affects things going forward for both of these teams?
You're right. It is an interesting spot for the two teams, mainly – and I think we've talked about this, Nate, but mainly for the next game. Mm-hmm. It'll have a huge impact on the next game. But for MLS, and I think if you're both teams, you have to look at it this way. This is a huge opportunity to get eyeballs on the regular Fox during the primetime slot during the week. Maybe some people don't even know the NFL are canceled and they're just, you know, flipping through and happen to stumble on the game. So from that perspective, I think this is a really great opportunity for MLS. And, you know, you're looking at them moving this game to this slot. And I think that was a very calculated decision, right? I mean, I think this game is going to be fantastic. You've got two teams with a lot of attacking firepower, both scored three goals in their first game in the playoffs. I think this is going to be a really fascinating encounter in the playoffs between two teams, two coaches that know each other really well. And it may lead to a competitive imbalance in the conference final, which will be a bit of a shame, and whichever team wins will have to deal with that. But I think you're looking at, if you're the league, you're looking at, hey, if we move Seattle, Dallas there's a good chance that Dallas could street smart this game up, and maybe wouldn't be the best thing to be on Big Fox. So Allie, I think they chose the right game to move there.
I completely agree. And I think it's great for Children's Mercy Park in Kansas City as well, having, you know, all the you know, big national spotlight on not just Sporting in Minnesota, but on Kansas City. So I think that great move for MLS, and, you know, especially when you just consider how hard it's been for Major League Soccer just over its history to really edge into the spotlight there. And this season in 2020, a year where no one really knew what was going to happen in terms of, will these leagues even get to play in Sporting, MLS, what they were able to do with MLS's back tournament. And then now just, you know, this one move in the playoffs is really big. But yeah, it's going to be a great game to teams that have been scoring at a high level and two coaches who know each other really well. Friendly underdogs. There's so many great storylines going into this game. And I mean, I just couldn't have picked a better matchup. I think, you know, when you just look at quality of play on the field and all the other great stuff that goes into this one, it's going to be really fun.
Yeah, I think, Carter, you really bring up an interesting point when you talk about them deciding on this game over the Seattle-Dallas game. Because, look, we spend a lot of time, and we're going to do so with Cal Williams, talking about how the Midwestern teams don't get the respect that they deserve. And at first blush, if they were making this decision just based on the markets and the star power, they're taking the Seattle game like that, right? Seattle's the big spenders in MLS. They've got big name players everywhere. And Dallas is obviously a huge market as well. But the excitement factor, if you're looking to put something on display that's going to feature attacking, goals, chances, drama, they picked the right game, as you said. I think this, I'm with you, Carter. I think this is going to be a terrific game. Sporting, go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt, Nate. I was just going to add that, you know, the different attendance circumstances around the country as well. And I think maybe some of the decision goes to the Sporting Kansas City fans and TV execs like having SKC fans on their televisions.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing, though, is that had maybe Portland advanced, you have a 2-3 seed matchup versus a 1-4 seed. It could have been a different situation there with two West Coast teams versus two middle of the country teams. But I think even still, this is going to be one of the best matchups in this entire MLS postseason, hands down. And they've all been really great. I mean, anyone who hasn't been watching every single game of the playoffs, you might have missed out on a really good game because it's hard to find a bad one this season.
Well, two really hot teams, Minnesota United and Sporting Kansas City. Great run of form. Minnesota United's unbeaten in their last nine. Now, Sporting Kansas City might point out they didn't play SKC during that stretch, and they were supposed to, but we had that game canceled. So who knows? Maybe they would have been unbeaten in their last 10, or maybe they would have suffered a loss at Children's Mercy Park. We don't know. But Sporting's in a good shape, a good run of form. So is Minnesota United. A lot of good attacking players. It should be a really good game. We're going to break it down with Cal Williams coming up on the show next. Also, Johnny Russell will join us in a little bit. We're off and running on the Sporting Kansas City show. And the Sporting Kansas City show continues on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Wherever you get your podcast content, wherever you stream your video content, we appreciate you joining us as always as we have a playoff preview edition of the Sporting Kansas City show underway. And as always, at least most of the time, they play so often we can't do it every time, but most of the time when Sporting KC line up to play against Minnesota United, we love to chat with our old friend, the former voice of Sporting Kansas City, voice of Minnesota United now, and married to a wonderful Kansas City native as well. So he comes back and visits us every once in a while. Cal Williams joins us. Cal, how are you, man? Thanks for joining us today.
I appreciate it. You'll get some brownie points for mentioning the wife there as well. I appreciate that. I'm good. It's obviously playoff time, isn't it? It's a good time of the year. It's a little bit chilly up here in Minnesota, so I'm looking forward to heading down to Kansas City when I can.
Yeah, no doubt. It's only slightly warmer here, but you'll take whatever you can get when you're coming from Minnesota. I understand that. Hey, you mentioned the playoff time. And where I would like to start with you is for Adrian Heath and for this club, that first playoff win seemed to mean a lot. You're a man that's famous for saying, just look what it means when we see the pictures of people that are celebrating, they're showing emotions. What did this one mean for the club and for the boss?
I think it's clear that everybody, for whatever reason, I say the majority of people rather, have written off Minnesota United for several years. Firmly understandable given the first 2 years of their existence in Major League Soccer. But I think they drastically overcame what was a wretched introduction to Major League Soccer and made themselves into somewhat of a force in 2019. And I think that's continued, if not gotten larger in 2020, despite the issues that everybody's had to deal with. The reputation of Minnesota United continues to grow across the world, and it helps when you sign players like Emmanuel Reynoso. I think the issue, and it's interesting because I was chatting to Kerry Savagnin about this earlier this morning, I feel as though, and it has to be a geographical thing, the likes of Minnesota United and very much Sporting Kansas City get absolutely nowhere near the credit they deserve. Mm-hmm. The majority of the praise goes to the teams on the coast. It goes to the big spenders, the consistent big spenders, and quite rightly so, but it doesn't mean that attention needs to be completely diverted from those that are doing well. And Kansas City absolutely have to be put in that bracket. So I think with Adrian Heath, it meant a lot because I know for certain he feels as though his side have had nowhere near the attention they deserve. And I have to say I agree with him because they play some lovely stuff. And the introduction of Reynoso and the new introduction of Robin Lourdes in the false nine has really given them a new dimension. And I would go as far as saying they play just as good a football as anybody in Major League Soccer at the moment, particularly when they are in this lovely flow that they find themselves in, full of confidence.
So, Cal, a lot of what you just said there is also a lot of why manager Peter Vermees over here at Sporting Kansas City believes that his side is really the underdog going into this game. And that was kind of a point of discussion earlier this week after he said just that in his press conference on Monday. So who's the underdog in this one? Is it more Minnesota? Is it more Sporting? Or do they equally kind of share the underdog storyline going into this one?
Ali, look, I know Peter Vermees very, very well. He is absolutely having everybody on here. The mind games are at its peak. I don't understand how you can ever be an underdog when you finish first in the Western Conference. That is never the case. So, look, I understand what Peter's doing. He's trying to take the pressure off of his players, and I get that. I understand and respect it. But regardless of how many fans you will or will not have in the building on Thursday, it's still a very difficult place to go. And there's no way that Kansas City are not favourites coming into this. And Minnesota, by the way, will absolutely be comfortable with that, because the underdog tag, as I'm sure you guys have seen throughout the year, has been it's been a label that they've been comfortable with for some time, not just this year. And I think Adrian Heath diverts pressure from his players very well, perhaps better than most in Major League Soccer. But the one thing I will say, I said this on numerous different platforms over the course of the last week or so, whilst coming down to Kansas City is still one of the most difficult tasks in Major League Soccer, I will say, and it's got nothing to do with Sporting, it's got everything to do with Minnesota, the intimidation factor of going away to Kansas City is nowhere near as large as what it has been in previous years. And as I say, that's nothing to do with the way that Kansas City operate. Nothing has changed there. It has everything to do with the way Minnesota United have put themselves together and the abundance of talent that they now have at their disposal. If you think back in history, Ali, if you go back over the last, six games, it's all been Sporting Kansas City down in Children's Mercy Park. So I would again assume that the pundits, regardless of what Peter Vermees has said, will once again be swaying heavy towards a Kansas City victory. I think that's okay. But knowing the way that Minnesota United now operates and the style in which they've implemented, particularly with the introduction, as I keep saying, of Reynoso, I think they'll fancy their chances more than ever.
Carter grew up in the halfway point between Minnesota and Kansas City. So if there's a nicer place in the world than Des Moines, Iowa, if this is the nicest rivalry in sports, I mean, he's like at the nexus of the nice universe. But Carter, can you get any nicer rivalry than sports than which side is arguing over who's the underdog?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good description there. And, you know, Cal laid it out, but I think all of us in the quote unquote flyover states have that mentality of,
yep,
of getting a little bit overlooked by people on the coasts. And I wholeheartedly agree that that's the case in MLS as well. I'm laughing a little bit too at the underdog thing. I think these two managers who know each other really well and get along really well will have a nice laugh about that after their post-game glass of wine, if they're able to share that in the COVID era. But Cal, let's dive into kind of the free-flowing soccer that you're talking about and this new look United, because we've talked about how many times these two teams have played against each other. But for me, it feels like the Minnesota United team coming in will be much different than the ones that Sporting KC has seen, of course, because that late season game never happened between the two teams.
Yeah, and I tell you what, Carter, I can't tell you how pleased I am to watch this team now. They are so easy on the eye. I'm not sure I had any blood to spare that would come from the eyes from the first two seasons. It wasn't very attractive, let me tell you. But in terms of the way that they play, it's very, very easy on the eye. And it all comes through Reynoso. Look, let's make no bones about it. He's the best player this club have ever had. For me, he's up there already in the conversation in the top five number 10s in Major League Soccer already, and he's only been here for a couple of months. We're only just scratching the surface with him. But prior to the game against Colorado, I believe it was something like 7 assists in just 9 starts, and he got himself a goal in that period as well. So for people to suggest that he's not integrated, that he's not gotten himself settled, is completely bizarre to me. So everything goes through him. As you guys are more than aware, over the course of the first 3 years in Major League Soccer, Minnesota transitioned out wide, and a lot of emphasis was put on the high-pressing fullbacks. Juanma Metenier, for me, is one of the best at doing it in Major League Soccer. Chase Gasper has learnt on the job and done very well. And then a lot of it came down to the three that play behind the centre forward. And where that's really changed over the course of particularly the last 6 months, as I said, since Reynoso has come in, is that the two, in inverted commas, wide players are now very much operating as inverted wingers, which causes a bit of a problem if you're in that area between the fullback and the centre half, because not only have you got a centre forward to mark, you've also got a winger full of intentions cutting in as well. Oh, and plus, by the way, you've also got, as we've mentioned, one of the best number 10s in Major League Soccer to deal with as well. So for a long, long time, as I mentioned, they were transitioning out wide, which was fine, it worked. How we could have done with somebody like Kai Kamara 18 months ago. But now everything transitions through Reynoso. And what has been a very big surprise, but a welcome surprise, has been the sudden emergence of Robin Lurt in this false nine role. I must admit, at one stage, when we had what was it? At one stage against FC Dallas, Minnesota United had essentially the third choice goalkeeper in goal. And I know he's now established himself as essentially the number one, at least for the rest of 2020. They then had the fourth and fifth choice centre-halves starting, a fifth-choice central midfielder in Marlon Hairston starting, and then Robin Lurt as a centre-forward. And it's because of the abundance of injuries that they sustained. And credit has to go to the coaching staff for making this work, because at one stage, Kai Kamara was unavailable because of a slight tweak. Aaron Schoenfeld had an injury. Minnesota had sold off Mason Toy for obvious reasons. And they didn't have another centre-forward. I don't think anybody's had to go through the perils that Minnesota United have this season, or at least from a consistency point of view. Yes, everybody's had injuries, and yes, it's been difficult. But a quick story in terms of the craziness this year. Minnesota were forced to go and bring in 3 players from USL, from Reno 1868, who are sadly no longer with us. But obviously now, in this world that we live in, you have to quarantine. And at one stage against FC Dallas, Minnesota literally did not have a recognisable centre-forward in the matchday roster. Hence why Robin Lurt moved into the role, and I'll get to that shortly. But because of that, Foster Langsdorf, who perhaps has got the best name in professional sports, by the way, he had come from a very good season in USL, 11 goals in 18 appearances for Reno, but he'd been quarantining, and it came down to the wire in terms of how he was going to be available. The game, I believe, kicked off at 5:30, the decision day games kicked off, I believe. And at that point, when the game was kicking off at 5:30, Foster Langsdorf's quarantine finished at 4:30. So he literally left the hotel, came over to the stadium and met his teammates for the first time and was told, here you go, here's your new teammates, you're going to be playing with them today. You've not met them, but here you go. So the point I'm trying to make here is that I don't think people have had to overturn the adversity that Minnesota United have this season in terms of injuries. But it has been somewhat of a blessing in disguise, particularly now with Robin Lurt in this false nine, as I mentioned, because what he does is he sits in between these horrible little gaps that centre-halves don't know what to do. He sits right in between, and then he sits in between the full-back and the centre-half, and he does a fabulous job of pulling the defenders away. It's no coincidence that Molino and Reynoso have now all of a sudden started scoring goals and playing very well together. Yes, the combination between the two has been wonderful to see, but a lot of it has to do with the movement of Robin Lurt. And here's me assuming he's going to start, by the way. It could very well be Kai Kamara on Thursday. But if Robin Lurt starts, I would suggest Sporting Kansas City have every reason to be worried, because I don't think many people have done too much preparation and getting ready for Robin Lurt in this new false nine role. It's caused a real problem for many, and it's given Minnesota United frontline a new lease of life, for sure.
Yeah, I know Adrian Heath said that the attacking four that he has right now, he feels like are as good as anybody in the league, especially when you talk about those inverted wingers getting involved in the attack. We're visiting with Cal Williams, getting ready for this match against Minnesota United. Let's explore those injuries a little bit more on the other side. You referenced what happened up top with the number nine, and you briefly touched on the goalkeeper situation, but you had Vito Minone last year. He's goalkeeper of the year. Aiko Parra, the defender of the year. Minone's gone. Tyler Miller comes in to replace him. He's injured for the year. Aiko Parra hasn't played since March. How has Minnesota United covered those two spots? And particularly maybe with Dane St. Clair, I thought he made a couple of massive saves in that first round playoff game, even though it turns out to be a 3-0 win. Seemed like that game could have gone in a different direction if he doesn't make a couple of big saves early in the game. So could you talk about how they've filled those two spots this year?
I think Dane St. Clair has been a surprise to everybody, Nate. I think at one stage, the thought was that Gregory Ranjit Singh would come in and replace Tyler Miller. That didn't work out as well as people thought. The whole aim for Dane St. Clair this year was to go out on loan and play as many games as he could in USL. And he was on loan at San Antonio and doing quite well. And I think if you ask everybody at Minnesota United, this opportunity has probably come a season or two earlier than they thought it would. Make no mistake about it, Tyler Miller will come back in and will be the number one goalkeeper at this club. That's the reason he was brought in. But Dane St. Clair is ahead of the curve. He's ahead of where you would expect him to be by miles. He's also, what a lot of people don't talk about, is he's actually used to pressure. And I know it's a completely different pressure. But going and winning the NCAA championship in 2018 really, really helped him, I think. Him and Chase Gasper, because they went on a consistent run. And also, people don't talk about the Open Cup run for Minnesota last year as well. But Dane St. Clair, whilst he's not been short of shaky moments and a little bit of nerves here and there, he looks about as solid as anybody right now, in my opinion. He's got very strong legs. He sprawls across the goal very well. He's very quick for a big individual as well. I think he's one for the future. I really do. He's been called upon this year and done very well. And I think he'll consider himself extremely unfortunate not to be a first-team regular next season, which I wholeheartedly expect, unfortunately, for him. And in terms of at centre-half, you guys know Aiko Parra better than anybody. He's a stalwart. There's a reason he was the MLS Defender of the Year last year. He was amazing. So to lose a player of that caliber is obviously, it requires those around to step up. The addition of Baké Dibassi has been wonderful. He's made a seamless transition into Major League Soccer, and he's a big brute of an individual, quick, aggressive, reads the game very well, very calm under pressure as well. It's very easy to label central defenders, isn't it? You know, we often think to ourselves, they're just defenders, they'll throw themselves in front of the ball and they can't really actually play the game. But I was actually quite surprised at how good of a footballer he is. He's actually quite comfortable with the ball at feet, and that has helped Minnesota from a transitional point of view. But the one person who I think deserves the utmost respect and attention, and he gets none, is Michael Boxall, who for me has to be the team MVP of the season. And I know many people may frown at that and suggest, why not Kevin Molino? I wouldn't disagree with that, but I think Michael Boxall has been an unbelievable presence at the back, and despite the last... despite him not being able to play the last two regular season games because of essentially what was a sliced leg, it was not very pleasant, let me tell you. He played every single minute of the regular season and has come back in and done very well indeed. So for me, Michael Boxall gets nowhere near the credit he deserves. Should have been in the conversation for the MLS Best 11, in my opinion. Again, you mentioned replacing somebody like Aiko Parra doesn't come around very often. So I think Michael Boxall has been beyond spectacular for Minnesota this season and should get a lot more credit for what he's done.
So, Kyle, how would Sporting Kansas City in this game with their attack, which, like Minnesota, has been pretty solid, it hasn't been the reason that they've dropped points or lost any games, really. How would they exploit that Minnesota defense in this one?
I think the intriguing thing here, Ali, is I think whoever Adrian decides to play at the six will be a massive piece to this. And as you quite rightly said, with Kansas City's inverted wingers, Shelton a little more target winger, a little more direct, but certainly with someone like Johnny Russell, let's say, for example, it's Asani Dotson playing in the six for Minnesota, who is another player who's been tremendous. I would expect him to really, really sit in front of that back four, because, again, with the way that Adrian likes to play, the two fullbacks will be aggressive. They will press, but that will leave Minnesota exposed. So once again, a game between these two sides where the number six will be at centre stage, in my opinion. So it'll be interesting to see the two centre halves. I think we'll have to watch their movements as well. But the one issue I noticed with Debassy is that he does like to step with the ball. As I said earlier on, he's quite comfortable with the ball. But when he does step, that does leave a bit of a gaping hole behind. And Alan Pulido, for me, is probably the best at Major League Soccer in exploiting those gaps. So that will be the issue for them, is they have to contain Pulido. And there's very few that can in Major League Soccer. So we'll wait and see, because I don't expect them to be as deep as many people often are at Children's Mercy Park either. You can't play for a tie now. You have to go for it. Yes, you can be reserved and disciplined, but knowing Adrian like I do, I think he'll be full throttle, and I think he'll be concentrating in the wide areas again with a lot of emphasis on getting the ball into Reynoso as quick as possible.
And a bit different, not a full Children's Mercy Park, although the players here have said it has been loud with the limited capacity. So maybe that's a little bit playing into Minnesota's advantage on the road as well. How's Minnesota doing with the schedule change, playing a day later than originally thought?
I don't know, Carter. I asked Adrian Heath about this yesterday, and he said it didn't really seem to affect his group too much. It's an extra day of training, essentially. I asked him whether or not there would be an issue with sharpness, having not played for essentially nearly 2 weeks now, and he didn't think so. He thought it would be okay. There were no scrimmages or exhibition games, to my knowledge. I'm sure there was internally, but not with anybody else, mainly because of the COVID situation. But he feels as though his group are about as sharp as they've ever been. He also feels as though this is perhaps because of the amount of players that are returning from injury. He also thinks this is probably the best group he's ever gone down to Kansas City with. Hence the admiration of the team, hence the excitement and the build-up. And I wouldn't go as far as saying expectation in terms of victory, but there's certainly expectation there in terms of them being able to play their game, which, let's be honest, hasn't been the case ever, really, for Minnesota and Kansas City.
Well, I think that my own personal opinion is that the change in schedule is going to affect whichever team wins this game more than it affects them in this game itself, because whichever team's fortunate enough to advance to the conference final is going to be facing a team with two extra days rest. And if that's Minnesota, they could end up traveling as well. So we'll see. I guess we hope one of our sides is lucky enough to complain about that down the road. But I'm with you, Cal. I think your Minnesota. I think this Minnesota United team is easily the best one that we've seen that's ever come to Children's Mercy Park. I think we've been able to see almost too much respect from the Minnesota United team towards Sporting Kansas City in games past. I don't think that's going to be the case this time around. I think we all ought to get ready for what should be another. There's going to be goals in this game, I think, and there's going to be excitement. So it should be a lot of fun. Cal, thank you so much for the time. We really appreciate it, and we can't wait to see you in person again real soon.
Cheers, guys. Thanks very much for having me.
That is Cal Williams, the voice of Minnesota United. They will be taking on Sporting Kansas City, the nicest rivalry in sports. I mean, we're arguing over which team's the underdog. You know, we're fighting over which team gets less respect. That's how we do it here in the Midwest. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Johnny Russell joins us on the show. The captain right now for Sporting Kansas City. Does he have some magic moments in this Western Conference semifinal in front of him? We'll talk with him next on the Sporting Kansas City show. And the Sporting Kansas City show continues on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Getting ready for tip-off between Kansas and Kentucky coming up in a little bit. But also, if you're checking us out on the podcast, wherever you get your podcast or stream your video content, we appreciate it. Our thanks to Cal Williams for joining us, giving us a little preview of Minnesota United in the last segment. Now it's time to focus in on the good guys, the home team, Sporting Kansas City. And we are joined by the one and only Johnny Russell on the show now. Johnny, what's up, man? How are you?
Good, man. How are you guys?
You know what? We're waiting for some soccer. It seems like we had that thrilling game in the first round. We've had to wait and wait. And then they tell us yesterday, you got to wait one more day for this game. What's it like for you guys?
I mean, this year it's been different to any other year anyway. So, I mean, what's an extra day? I mean, it's a bit of a new situation for me, having the game change sort of that close. But, I mean, it is what it is. We're still going to be prepared. So it's not as if it's going to be a problem.
Johnny, did you guys need that extra time to come down from the excitement and all of the emotions in that win against San Jose? What was that game like? And after just the exhale of you win it in PKs, can you take us through for you what that post-game experience was like?
It was brilliant. We should have had the game wrapped up. We shouldn't have conceded that late. But it just adds to the whole occasion. And you know, when you sort of get through games like that, sometimes they feel better than, you know, like a really dominant win. The fact that you've had to dig deep and sort of fight through it. And that's what it was in the end. It was a fight and we came out on top. I mean, all thanks to Tim. Tim's an absolute machine when it comes to penalties. I've never seen anything like it. And, you know, really that's what it came down to, his brilliance in the end. And no, obviously you would love to be able to celebrate games like that, but the circumstances we're in, it was pretty low key, just a big exhale after it, job done, and look forward to the next game.
Well, Tim, of course, wanted to take zero credit for his performance and wanted to give it all to the shooters. And first of all, what's your take on that?
Nah, that's all Tim. I mean, it's easier to score a penalty than it is to save it, and he's done three in a row, so it's all Tim now. Zero credit.
Well, you get some, and I was going to ask you, being the first penalty taker, what's going through your mind as you're walking up to the step, such an important penalty in the shootout?
We won the coin toss, so always prefer to go first, get off to a good start, and it always just feels psychologically you put the pressure on the other team if you score first. So that was it. Get up there, be confident, finish my penalty, and get us off to a good start. That was the only thing going through my head. And honestly, going into penalty shootout, so even if a team's got a penalty.
Okay, so you touch on it a little bit there, Johnny, in terms of the confidence you have when you know Tim's on your side. That penalty you took, though, I mean, you crushed that thing in the top corner. Goalkeeper guesses the right way. That he's not, nobody's saving that. And all three of the penalties were like that, but was that a statement of intent on your part? Like, that to me, that set the tone for the whole thing. Was that part of your mindset going up to take that penalty?
I mean, kind of, you know, going first, like I said, you want to get your team off to a good start. So, I mean, it kind of was like a bit of a statement of intent that, you know, I'm always confident stepping up anyway. But if you go first, then for me, you have to score. So that's a little bit of added pressure I like to put on myself. But no, it was basically just step up, finish it as well as I could. And sort of just get us on, get us moving, get us rolling. And that was it.
Johnny, now the team looks ahead to Minnesota United coming to town. What's the mentality been like in training this week? And how well prepared do you feel like this team is after that game, like you said, against San Jose, where you did have to dig a bit deeper to get the win? How does that prepare the team a bit better maybe for this game against Minnesota, a team you've seen quite a few times as well?
Yeah, that's one of the bonuses as well. We have seen each other a few times and we've managed to come out and top. So, I mean, coming up against San Jose is always a difficult game, but then having not played them during the season as well, it's maybe we knew what they were going to do coming into the game, but maybe kind of took us by surprise a little bit. We started well and then sort of let ourselves down. But Minnesota, we've played each other enough this season that we know how to prepare for them. We've prepared well. We've had good training. So there'll be no surprises. It'll be like every other game we've had against Los. It'll be, you know, a tough game. But, I mean, I'm hoping that we've got more than enough to come out on top in that and sort of carry on the home form that we've got against them as well.
Talk to me about the matchup on the wings for you guys with their fullbacks, and it looks like they're getting some reinforcements. Romain Metenier looks like he will be available for this game coming back into the side. What's it like going up against him specifically and then also Chase Gaspar on the other side?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really come directly up against Metenier, but he's a good player. Gaspar is always a difficult guy to play against. He's solid. He's always been like that. So, I mean, difficult guy. He's one of the players, you know what you're going to get from him. And it's going to be a tough game. But, I mean, that's the games I like. I like to challenge myself against, you know, tough opposition. And, you know, he's definitely one of those guys. But, you know, honestly, it doesn't change my thinking going into the game. I prepare the same way. And I go on to individually win, you know, my battle, whoever that's with. And, you know, I'm sure he'll be doing the same. But, you know, I'd like to think if, you know, I prepare properly, I get into the game in the right way, then I'm going to come out top.
We're visiting with Johnny Russell. And, Johnny, you've been wearing the captain's band for a while now. One of the things that I think is so great about Sporting is I feel like there's 7 or 8 guys that are worthy of wearing the captain's band, but that makes it that much more special maybe when you are one of the guys that gets picked for it. I know that in one of our interviews that you've done with Carter, you said that it means a lot to you. I'm curious, does having that band on your arm change anything about the way you go about your business on the field, in the locker room, in any way? And if so, like how does it change the way you go about your business?
I mean, maybe a little bit, but I feel that I'm one of the stronger personalities anyway in the locker room. I feel like even for the younger guys, I'm one of the guys that's always there if they need to talk or anything like that. So I don't feel in that aspect it's sort of changed anything. I think it's just, I mean, the honour of being chosen to wear it. Like you said, we've got so many guys that are worthy of wearing it, and to be chosen to lead the team is something that I'll always be proud of. I mean, obviously B's been out, kind of got it by default that way, but I've managed to keep it since. And like I said, it's just I said to Carter as well, it's a huge honour, and you know, one that, you know, you don't really get many opportunities to get. So no, it's obviously stepping out with that armband, it's a proud moment for me every time I do it.
You get to have a go at the refs every once in a while a little bit more though, right? You're a little more licensed to do that. That's fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it gives me a little bit of leniency. But I mean, it doesn't really stop me normally, but I think I get away with a little bit more. So
you got to beat Elie there first though, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like Elie is usually the one mediating a lot of time.
They're always first to go.
Well, Johnny, because of COVID, we haven't, as media, gotten to go into the locker room as much. And I know that this team loves their music, the pregame pump ups and post game. What have been the top 3 songs of the season and maybe specifically the postseason for this team to get ready for games?
Oh, good question. There's been a lot of the, you know, the Latino guys have took over a lot this year. There's been a lot of, you know, their sort of genre of music that they've chose, they've set the playlist. But it's been good, it's been working. we had a song from, I think it was last year, the year before. It was like a French rap song called Papa Ute. So after games, if we get a good result, that usually comes on, and then it's down to Mike's room at the back for a post game shot. So it's been working well. So I mean, Daniel's usually the one that takes over, but he's been swayed a lot by a few of the guys.
So, go ahead, Nick.
I was gonna say, so we got some Bad Bunny, maybe some Daddy Yankee. Is that what we're listening to the Latino music, and Daniel's been swayed by those guys. Is that what you're saying? They've had some influence on him?
Pretty much. I mean, his playlist is adapted over time, we should say. But No, it's good. It's always a good buzz in the change room as well. So that's good to have that music on. And
maybe better than having the dads run the, no offense to, you know, the fathers here, but the Peppa Pig, the Frozen, you don't get any of that. No.
Thomas and Friends, I could play that old soundtrack for you.
I know, my shuffle and my music isn't, you don't know what you're going to get, to be honest.
Yeah.
Well, Johnny, as a part of the reason, actually, or, you know, the big reason why the game's getting moved is it's getting on Fox, Big Fox, which is actually a huge deal here in the United States and for MLS. Does that go through your mind at all, the implications of being on the big channel?
Like you said, no, I know it's good for the MLS, and obviously we'll be able to put on a show, but for me personally, it makes no difference to how I'm going to go about the game. Obviously, it's good to have people watching. It's given the MLS that platform as well, and hopefully we can put on a show to sort of justify that. But nah, it doesn't mean much to me, to be honest.
Well, you guys put on a show in the first round against San Jose. I mean, that I think was the most exciting match of the playoffs up until this point. So that could indicate why they decided to take your game and put it on national television. So before we let you go, Johnny, I'd just like to get your thoughts. I know I've interviewed enough Peter Vermees players to know that the answer is usually it's not about the other team. It's about us. It's about what we do. So what do you guys need to do? What are some of the things we need to really watch for on Thursday night for you to get that win and advance to the conference finals?
Pretty much what we're good at, keeping the ball in their half, keeping the ball high up. We know how good they are in the counter. We know how dangerous they are. So being switched on defensively and limiting the opportunities they get to really break on us and attack on us, it takes away a big part of their game. So, I mean, that's what the aim is. But you're right, we have the mindset of it isn't about the other team, especially when, you know, they're coming to our home turf. It's about what we do. If we go about our business the right way, then, you know, we feel we can beat anyone in this league.
Well, I think that you got a whole bunch of fans that would agree with that and hope to see it on Thursday. Johnny, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it. Good luck on Thursday night.
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure.
All right. That is Johnny Russell, the captain for Sporting Kansas City right now. And we'll take a break real quick. We'll wrap things up on this edition of the Sporting KC Show right after this. All right, we're back to wrap things up on this edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show. Going to give you all the details again for Thursday night. The game was supposed to be Wednesday. If you're just joining us, it was moved to Thursday because Big Fox, the over-the-air Fox network, was supposed to have an NFL game. They didn't have it. They asked Major League Soccer for a game, and they said, why don't you take this Minnesota United versus Sporting Kansas City game? I said that backwards, Sporting Kansas City versus Minnesota United game. And it's going to kick off around 7:30. Our pregame coverage on ESPN Kansas City 94.5 FM will start at 7 o'clock. Carter, and that'll be hosted by Ali Trost until we do have a kickoff and play-by-play with me, Jacob Peterson, and Carter on the sidelines. Jacob, Carter, and I will also be doing a video pregame show that you can catch on the Sporting KC app starting at 7 o'clock as well. So about a 20-minute or so pregame show. We'll have lineups for you. We'll have highlights. We'll break down the matchups and all that, both on the radio and on television. So you got your pregame coverage set. Basically, just be ready at 7, however you want to consume your content, video, audio, we'll have it all set up for you. And then the game, guys, 7:30. And Carter, after all the talk we've done about this, Cal Williams said he thinks this is a different Minnesota United team coming to town this time around. They are not going to be as intimidated as teams in the past have been. And I don't know about you, I feel like we've been able to see that intimidation factor from Minnesota United. They have not played like the same team when they come to Children's Mercy Park. I'm not expecting that this time around.
Yeah, and especially those first 2 years, I feel like that the Minnesota team was just so completely different. And so I agree with you. I think this is the best Minnesota United team that's coming to Children's Mercy Park. They get the benefit of not having a full Children's Mercy Park as well. So it could be, you know, streaks are meant to end, but it's pretty ridiculous that they haven't gotten a point here during the regular season. Obviously no points on offer here, just win or go home. But I think the biggest difference is, as we just heard from Kyle Williams, Reynoso is a fantastic player, and it's been really fun to watch his integration into the team. I think Sporting, we saw how Minnesota changed when he came on at Children's Mercy Park for a little bit of a cameo, about a 20-minute cameo or so a couple months ago. And he helped change the game for the Loons when he came on. So I'm looking forward to seeing him. And Allie, like Cal said, the six for each team is going to have a big job on their hands trying to stop the other really high-powered attacks getting forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that this is going to be a game that the midfield will really help dictate what the tempo is for both sides. Possession's going to be big, and really just two really strong attacking teams. And defensively, Peter Vermees said it in his press conference on Monday, defense is going to be big for the Sporting side, and it's been big for them all season. I think when you look at that San Jose game, they really like some of those goals that they conceded back, and there's going to be a lot to learn from that game. But we saw this Sporting defense improve through the later half of the season. And you bring up Reynoso, and when Sporting Kansas City saw him about, you know, a month or two ago, and while he only played a limited number of minutes, he did change the tempo, but did struggle to connect passes. He only completed 50% in that game against Sporting, has since played a bigger role and found more success. So I asked Vermees if he thought that there was any disadvantage to not getting to play Minnesota, now getting to see them in the postseason and that last game that got canceled. And he didn't say if it was a good or a bad thing, but, you know, I think seeing Reynoso at this point in the season versus when they saw him earlier is going to be a completely different situation. So they've got a Minnesota team that they're familiar with, although still very different this time around. So a lot to game plan for, but two really, really competitive sides who have a lot of strengths, especially in the attack. So I'm going to have my eyes on this, on the Sporting defense for sure. But midfield, the number six, and then the attacking mid roles too. If you've got Gadi Kinda and Alan Pulido in this game combining together, it's going to look different than if Pulido's not good to go, but it's looking like he will be available. So that definitely changes things for Sporting. But I'm so excited for this game. And yeah, Fox picked a good one. MLS picked a good one to put in the national spotlight.
Well, one of the other things to factor in is, as Carter, you said, you know, with Reynoso, we got to see a little glimpse of him, but he wasn't fully integrated to the team yet. He didn't have that much time on the field to make a difference in that game. That was also pre-Elie's return. Because I remember one of our big, you know, conversation pieces going into that game was, man, Busio's been playing so well at the six. Now he's going to have a real challenge on his hands if he goes up against Reynoso, because he's going to be playing against a really high-priced number 10. And we didn't get to see it for as much of that game as maybe we had hoped to. And now we're going to see Elie versus Reynoso, and Elie playing as well as maybe he's ever played in a Sporting KC shirt. I think that hopefully should bode well for Sporting Kansas City in this game. To your point, Allie, I'm going to be fascinated to see what the SKC lineup looks like. Busio played such a good game at that kind of number 10 role in this last game around. But Gadi Kinda is one of the highest priced players on the team. Is he back fully fit and recovered? Can he go 90 minutes? If so, what does that do to Busio's spot on the team? We've seen Busio play some out on the wing. We've seen him play our other midfield positions as well. Who knows? But I think that's going to be fascinating to see. And then the Alan Pulido situation. Is he ready to come back and start and go 60 minutes plus? Is he just ready to come back and maybe be a weapon off the bench? Carter, I think all those things are going to be really, really interesting to see how they shake out in this game.
A lot up in the air, and quite possibly some lineup decisions, some really tough decisions for manager Peter Vermees heading into this game. So I'm very curious as well to see who's out there. I think the man we talked to today, Johnny Russell, might be the first name on the team sheet. Well, after Tim Melia, of course, but first outfield name on the team sheet. And I'm looking for him as well to we know he likes playing at Children's Mercy Park, and we know he likes having the armband on as well. So I really want to see how he does out on the wing, and he's caused problems for Minnesota in the past as well. So you're right. There's going to be some big lineup decisions, and I'm really fascinated to see who's going to be out there for Sporting.
very tough, but at the same time, I feel like Vermees has done a great job this season, whether his hand's been forced to do so or just from lineup decisions that he makes ahead of time, being very strategic about his subs. And the Sporting bench is so deep. If you can find the right opportunity to maybe capitalize on a trend that you're seeing on the field or a weakness that might be exploited by the speed of Jerso Fernandez off the bench or bringing Eric Hurtado in, and what we've seen from him this season and his effectiveness in and around the box, I just think that Sporting's depth is going, as we've talked about, even going into this playoffs and really all season long, is going to prevail for them. You know, if they're going to win, it's not just going to be, you know, because of Alan Pulido's performance, but it's going to take the whole team as it has this entire season.
Yep. And it's going to be a lot of fun. I think there's going to be goals in this game. I think there are going to be moments of drama, and it should be a very, very entertaining one as well. So with that, we're going to sign off for this edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show. Hopefully we're talking to you next week in the wake of the conference finals, by the way, because if Sporting Kansas City are to win this game on Thursday, they'll play on Monday in the conference finals. And that depth that Ali just talked about might be taxed by Peter Vermees again this time around. Of course, you got to manage this game just to try to win it. And then you'll deal with the legs and the mileage and all that stuff. But at least Sporting Kansas City know they don't have to travel. And I do think that is a big, big factor for trying to recover for that game on Monday, if they can get there. So that's going to do it for us. For Johnny Russell, Cal Williams, Carter Augustine, and Ali Trost, this is Nate Buchady saying thanks for listening to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show. And hopefully we'll see you next week.